Hi, this is Nathan from Voice That's Fire, and this is my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Dominate.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man being realistic.
As the story grows.
I always wanted to be part of a small rebellion.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it.
First hearing Voice That's Fire, hearing Rookie. I thought I'd seen the music video somewhere, but I could not find a music video. So maybe I'm making up that there was one, which means it must have been.
Right. I think a couple of people had put together videos for it, like just like fans. I remember there was one that we particularly loved that was all Transformers. It was awesome. But that's all.
Yeah. So I think it must have been on a comp somewhere. And then picking up after the eulogy and just that opening track, that refrain of where's your anger, where's your fucking rage, man? Just like, that song gets me every time, like still.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
Where's your anger? Where's your fucking rage? What a dancing sloth. Where's your anger? Where's your fucking rage? Where's your anger? Where's your fucking rage? Where's your anger? What's your fucking rights? What's your right up? 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 What's your fucking rights? What's your right up?
How did you first discover music? What was your earliest memory?
My earliest memory with music is digging into my parents' 8-tracks and vinyl. It was a combination of Dylan, Simon and Garfunkel, and a lot of musical soundtracks like Man of La Mancha, West Side Story, Les Mis, stuff like that. So my first musical experiences were with folk music, like 60s folk music and musicals.
Oh, that's fun.
Interesting combination.
Yeah, for sure. So what got you into to punk or hardcore or just a subgenre of music then?
For the most part, I just sort of accidentally ran into it. But really what happened was my cousin Chris and his sister Lisa, my cousins Lisa and Chris, I don't know why I called her his sister. She's also my cousin. They had gotten into punk. And I remember them sending me mixtapes of what they were into. Because at the time, I remember I was into, like, it was in the 80s, and I was sort of into, like, hair metal stuff. And listening to Motley Crue and stuff like that. And they're like, no, you've got to hear this stuff called punk. I'm like, what the hell is that? And they sent me, I remember I had Dead Kennedys, Black Flag, Minor Threat, Code of Honor. There was an alternative Tentacles compilation called Let Them Eat Jelly Beans, back when Reagan was in office. And and I think Husker Du was another one. But I remember starting out, like, I'd listened to some new wave stuff and was like, okay, I can see how this is catchy and cool and stuff. And then that sort of progressed into punk, hardcore, things of that nature. And at first I wasn't super interested in the screamy stuff. hardcore stuff. I was more attracted to the more melodic stuff like Dag Nasty or Husker Du, stuff like that. But as I started getting into that, I started, you know, Minor Threat came in, and there was a lot of catchiness to that music, you know what I mean? So lot of the stuff that I liked that was still had some guy screaming into a microphone still was, you know, was sort of catchy, and that's what I've always been into, is something that almost has an accidental pop sensibility behind the anger, I guess. So that form of punk really caught me.
So did you ever play an instrument, or have you always been a singer?
Well, I have always been somewhat able to play guitar, at least enough to, I mean, I do a solo thing now with just me and a guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
So hopefully I can at least make it good enough, you know? So, it was always, before that, my main interest has always been singing. But I've dabbled around in other instruments like piano, guitar, bass, just different things, just because, you know, if you're writing music, it's hard to just sing, write something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So when did you start getting into bands? Was Boy Set Fire your first, or did you have a trial run through a bunch?
Yeah, there was a bunch of stuff before that. I remember in high school, I had put together a band. It was me and my friend Bart. And I had no clue what happened to him, but I was in high school. I think it was 10th grade. And we had a band called Subculture, and I would love to say it was a band, but it was really just him and me hanging out, listening to music. We had guitars. I had a bass, and he had a guitar, and we sort of would mess around trying to write stuff, but we didn't really do much. And then after that, we were living in Florida. I had started a band with a couple of guys that I was skating with. And, what had happened is a band had formed, and this guy named Chad was singing for them. This is down in Pensacola, Florida. And he was not a good singer at all by any stretch of the imagination. And I remember being at the practice because they were all my friends though. And, and they were doing Twist of Cain, Danzig. And it just wasn't working out with that guy singing. So they're like, hey, why don't you try this? I did it, and they were like, oh, okay, you're in, you know. So that was it. From there, we started there, and then we started playing songs, writing our own music. But it all started with covering Twist of Cain. And then we started setting up shows. We never put anything out recording-wise, but we played a lot of shows in Pensacola, Florida at a place called the Night Owl. Funny enough, I recently ran into the promoter, this guy Gus, that used to put on our shows all the time. And he's like the touring manager for Foo Fighters and shit. So
really?
At Boys That's Fire, we're playing this festival, and I walked by an office and went, God, he was like, Nathan, oh my God. Like, it was like this weird reunion from the late 80s, early 90s. But, so then after that, I moved back up north to, Maryland and Delaware and, started a band called Nine. I think that was the only name it had. I can't remember, but, that and some other ones, it's weird. I had like a couple of pop punk bands that I was doing, which was one of them was with, my friend Alan and a couple of people. And then the other one was called Attic, and I was playing, it was actually me and Josh from Boy Sets Fire. We're doing this band, and both of them really didn't go anywhere. We didn't really play Nine played some shows, but it didn't really, and at that same time, it's so weird, because during this time I was playing in a ton of bands, and I'm remembering it as I go. Chad from Boy Sets Fire and I also had a band, called, the hell was that called? Jones Chapel, which was way different. It was like Voivod, like sort of weird metal type stuff, and weird time signatures and stuff. And then this pop punk stuff I was doing. So all these bands were all at once. And so the funny thing is that I was in one band with Josh, one with Chad, and then Chad and Josh started hanging out. They ended up marrying sisters, and I went on my way doing something else, and they formed Boy Sets Fire and needed a singer. So they got in touch with me about singing for this new band that they were doing, and then it was sort of history from there.
That's cool. How did you guys, I guess it just happened over time naturally, but you guys have such an interesting sound that blends kind of, yeah, that pop influence, that really catchy hook with the hardcore and the heavy aggression. How did you guys come to define that, or just accidental?
Yeah, we're all weirdos. Josh and I, our parents were friends before we were even born, so I've known him all my life. Chad and I went to high school together, and like when they got together to play music, there was no real set thing other than they wanted to do the music scene here. The punk scene that was here was very apolitical. It wasn't really, there wasn't a lot of political stuff. And we had all grown up on like political music. Chad was more of a metal guy, but even in that, like Anthrax and stuff like that had some political messages. And Josh and I came from a punk background, so there's all that. And so when I remember the story of them telling it because I wasn't there. They were literally the founders of Boy Sets Fire and sat and sort of made the rules for what they were going to do, that it was going to be political, that we were going to tour, and that because no other band around here really got out of Delaware. So, and that they wanted to just let whatever happened happen. You know what I mean? Like get a bunch of people who had very different influences and we just allow it to happen, you know? And that's exactly what we did. We got together with a bunch of different influences and styles and just did what sounded right. And it just came out that way.
That's cool. Yeah, I've always appreciated like getting a Boy Sets Fire record and putting it on because you never know what you're going to get from track to track. And it all makes sense and it's all interesting and good, but it's like, all right, what's going to happen when I hit play?
Right.
So I'm curious, I know you guys toured, you were with Initial Records for Day the Sun Went Out, then you guys signed with Victory. You guys weren't on Victory that long. I know a lot of people had later issues with Victory and with Tommy. What was your relationship like with Victory Records?
It was weird. Because we were probably the only band that got away with getting a one-off contract with them. At the time when we signed to Victory, we were, without a better way to put it, we were sort of the hot item band at that time. Mm-hmm. So we were able to sort of negotiate our contract however the fuck we wanted to. And so we told him, look, we'll do a one-off with you. We're not going to sign a big deal. You know, which bit us in the ass later a little bit, only because he wouldn't give us, like, he wouldn't do a video for us. He wouldn't do all this stuff because, you know, without a little bit more of a promise that we were going to hang around. You know, whatever. And, but at the same time, it saved us a lot of bullshit because, I mean, well, you've heard the stories, the horror stories, you know, and they're all true and dude sucks, you know, but so it was sort of fortunate that we were able to pull that because, and I'll say that many other contracts that we had done were not so lucky and good. But that one I'm very proud of. So
Yeah. There are some stories about Victory. Victory and Trustkill, man. Both those labels, like, highly influential releases and just like run by terrible people.
Yeah, without a doubt.
I know we're quickly racing through your band history, so if you want to stop at any point and talk about something at length, that's fine, but I'm curious what led to your initial hiatus and breakup back in 06?
Yeah, so we got to a point where we weren't having fun anymore. We were constantly trying to climb the ladder, so to say, and mm-hmm. constantly trying to remain relevant. And it was a struggle. It really was. I think one of the reasons was when we signed a wind up and all that kind of shit, we stopped touring for a while, especially in the U.S., because we were writing. And we were so bogged up with writing that we let go of a lot of really good tours that would have helped us. And so when we finally went back out on the road, nobody gave a shit anymore. You know, obviously in Europe, it never dies. They just, Germany especially loves us to death and we love them back because they hung in. But in the States, it's just different. People lose interest quick, you know, and you have to be constantly on top of it. And we didn't want to be, and we still don't want to be, you know, if we have to constantly be in your face, keep your attention, fuck it. What's the point? You know, we want to have fun and we want to play music and be in a band. And that's still the thing. You know what I mean? But at that time we were burnt out. We were done. And there were a lot of internal issues between me and our drummer, Matt, at the time that just were not getting resolved. And it turned out, you know, when we got back together, they weren't going to get resolved. And I would say that that's true for everyone else in the band versus Matt as well, you know, and, you know, not to do like a shit talking thing, because I really don't think that's how to handle something like this, but we were all going in different directions. Not all of us, me, Josh and Chad and we're going in one direction. Matt was going in the other, you know? And I think even as people, like we'll never be friends. I'll never be friends with Matt again. And I think the feeling's mutual. And I think that's sort of a cool thing to be able to accept sometimes is to go, all right, we're strangers now. Let's never talk again because we do not click. And, there's sort of a freedom in that, you know, you don't feel bad towards the person anymore. You wish him well. You just cool. It's better this way, you know? So, you know, we broke up, got back together, and then Matt left the band. You know, there could be all kinds of arguments on whether he left or we kicked him out or blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, who gives a shit, because it was meant to be that we were separate, you know? So, So then from there, we did While a Nation Sleeps and then the newer album, self-titled album, and we're going to keep going until we don't go, you know. But it'll be in this realm, in our way, you know, to where we will, you know, if we feel like playing shows, we'll play them. If we don't, maybe you'll see us in 5 years, who knows, you know. If we feel like writing an album, maybe we will, maybe we won't, we don't care. And you know, I am spending my time concentrating more fully on my solo stuff, so that's where I'm going.
That's cool. Yeah. I saw you have a bunch of dates over in Europe, in Vienna and in Germany coming up this fall, right? Or later this summer? Or maybe they happened? Did they happen?
They happened, but I have more coming up next year. The patch of dates coming up are actually with Jack O'Shea from Bayside. And I are going down south and back, and then I'm doing some shows going up north as well. Like, I've got a bunch of dates. If you go to my Facebook page, you can find them. Facebook page is the best way to find it. Nathan Gray Music, sorry, on Facebook. If you look that up, you'll be able to see all the dates coming up in the U.S. and Europe and everywhere. I will be touring and playing, and I have a live album DVD coming out and all this crazy shit.
That's awesome. Yeah, I saw you're going to be in Philadelphia later, which is pretty cool. So talk to me. Wikipedia says that, I think I missed this at the time, that you had a band after Boy Sets Fire called The Casting Out.
Mm-hmm. I had a couple bands after Boy Sets Fire. I had The Casting Out, and I had I Am Heresy. The Casting Out
Yeah.
Was if the casting out was me chickening out on what I'm doing now. The casting okay. out was me going, okay, I'm going to go solo. I'm going to do this. Fuck, I'm freaking out. I need a band. You know? And okay. on my new album, my new solo album, Feral Hymns, I actually reclaimed some of those songs. So, and how they are originally supposed to be. But, you know, it was a fun band. It was something that I loved doing and a lot of people, but it was constant lineup changes and just constant stress and craziness. So that had to end. And then I started this band, I Am Heresy, which is more of a metal band that I started with my son, Simon, and a couple of friends from New Jersey. And we did crazy fucking hardcore metal stuff to scream out some demons and get past some things. And then that as well just went by the wayside, you know?
Yeah.
But, and I think at the end of the day, a lot of the things that I did that weren't Boy Sets Fire were just me trying to not do what I'm doing now. And finally, I was sitting at my computer and I had written this song Echoes off of Feral Hymns, which was the first song I wrote for my solo stuff. And I was like, ah, crap. I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can do this. And I sent the song to Oizy, who runs End Hits Records, which is Boy Sets Fire's label. And, and he was like, okay, I'm going to set up recording with Pete from Bouncing Souls, like all this stuff. We're going to do this. We're going to do it on this date. Write some more songs now. Because he knew if he gave me any opportunity to keep going, I would just form a band and or chicken out. So it was a big deal for like my friends to go, dude, stop making bands. Just go solo. Do your thing. Do what you do and don't worry about other people for a while, you know? So that's what I did.
That record came out earlier this year?
Yes.
That was from January, right? Is there a theme on Feral Hymns, or is it a political, like the Boy Sets Fire?
The theme from this is just a rebirth. And I think I'm going to expand on that a lot because what I'm doing is taking a lot of the more personal politics from Boy Sets Fire that I brought to that band. And because that's really me, is that blending of the personal and political, and not so much just preaching a certain dogma or statement, but more empowering people to be kinder, to be better. And, cause as I've said for a very long time, happy people don't make other people miserable. And I feel like that is a very important place to start, is searching within yourself. You know, people who are hateful and angry and selfish are not happy with themselves, you know, and that's just a fact. So once people are able to accept themselves, once people are able to be happy with who they are as a person, you then don't care how other people become happy. You know, you have people that are angry at gay people, angry at people who are transgendered, angry at women, angry at, you know, whatever the fuck they're angry at, which turns into this hateful thing towards people. And happy people don't do that. Happy people are like, oh, you're gay? Great. Cool. Are you happy? Awesome. You know, I found this in my own life, getting to a point where I'm like, you know, this album was also somewhat of a story of rebirth, in that when I was young, I was the victim of sexual abuse, in the church that I was in. And a lot of that, which I buried, turned into very hateful, angry behavior. And it wasn't until I started letting go of that and finding ways to heal myself from that experience, when I was able to, you know, I started realizing that, like, I would see someone smiling and my first reaction would be, what the fuck are they happy about? Wow, And it started hitting me, like, I'm just an angry fucking person. And I need to figure out why that is. And so I delved in, and I didn't want to, but I needed to. And once I started delving into that, and once I started finding out what it was, I was able to start healing myself. And at that point, once I started doing that, I see people happy and I'm excited for them, you know? So, and that's a very big difference. And that's something that I really want to push with this music, is to also tell my story, because, I mean, statistics say that, you know, in a room of just a few people, I'm not going to be the only one that's experienced this, you know?
Right.
And one of the most powerful things that someone can hear and take in is that they're not alone.
Yeah.
And that could be a game changer for people. Because you can, you know, when you go through abuse and different things like that, like, you can sort of know intellectually that you're not alone, statistically that you're not alone, but to literally have someone stand up in front of you and courageously speak it out loud in front of you can be a real game changer for people. And I think once you do that, once you allow people to realize that they're not alone and that there is hope for them, then they can begin the journey of self-healing. Then they can start becoming less hateful, less angry, less spiteful, and start becoming more happy, you know, and with that comes the political of that, becoming more progressive, becoming more able to handle how other people live their lives, you know, and having an empathy for other people, having a care and a concern for all those around you. Which always starts with your family and friends, and then it reaches out to your town, your city, your state, your country, your world. And then once you start thinking globally with empathy and care and hope, that's where real change starts. When you start realizing that we are all together in this, and the more we help others, the more that comes back to help us. You know, it's almost like an altruistic greed, you know, that realization that when you help others, it helps you as well, you know? So that's really what my mission is, I guess, is to help people become better people in order to make a better world, you know, instead of just chanting political slogans at them, you know?
That's cool. Was there something specifically that helped you in your healing?
Yeah, I think one of those things was music. And it was speaking what had happened. Echoes, as I was saying, was the first song and is fully about what had happened.
Beyond the echoes in the dark. Beyond the echoes in the dark. Dark. Resonate and fall apart. Beyond the echoes in the dark. Beyond the echoes in the dark.
Not only, you know, when I wrote that song, I broke. It was, I lost it. And I've actually had a couple of shows and I've had to explain the song because in the middle of the song, there's a line in the song, here in my heart, I've carved the words, you don't own me. And that's a very powerful thing. For someone who's been through abuse, and that feeling that this person that's done this to you, that's taken this from you, somehow owns you, somehow has control over you. And they do. Until you find healing, they really do. And it's a very powerful time when you finally turn that and you realize they have no power over you. And you realize that you have power over your own life and you can make a difference. And make a change in how that person has affected your life. So, you know, bringing that forth and then having friends surround me with love at that point and inspire me to know you have to say this, you have to put this out. And then doing the video for Echoes, which my friend Bobby Bates, we did it in this rundown church, which of course was symbolic of, you know, growing life within the rubble of what it had symbolically destroyed me. And that's not to say that all religion and all, you know, whatever is bad, because I got past that hate as well. You know, with this release, I feel like I got past that hate as well, as not always going, oh, religion's stupid and sucks and anybody that believes in God is an idiot. You know, that's not true, you know, and that's part of healing, is realizing that not everyone caused you that pain. You know what I mean? There are people who are very good people that they live by a certain guideline in their life, and that's beautiful. If what you believe causes you to be a better person, who am I? You know what I mean? Who am I to judge that? That's awesome.
Right, yeah.
And one of the things that really helped me with that was realizing that spirituality and religion and things like that, all it is it's grasping onto the intangible, you know, as something that we can't fully understand, but it makes us feel something inside. And for me, that's music. You know, and that was a beautiful realization. It was like, now I can connect with people I couldn't connect with before, people that brought hate up in my heart. Now I see them and I go, I get it. I get it. Music is that for me. Your God and your religion and these things, I get that, because that's what music and what musicians do for me, you know. Yeah. And I can't explain it. I can't explain why putting on a certain song washes over me like waves and heals me, but it does. You know?
Yeah.
And so all that to say, to be able to take that in and to be able to get all of that healing all at once and to use music as that catalyst to ritualize it out, then that next step of getting on stage, presenting that to others, and then realizing how deeply you are touching certain people, and getting the stories back and people coming up in tears and explaining their stories. And then you being able to, you know, there's almost no other way to put it, but minister to them, you know, it's sort of a religious term, but it's real, you know, it's like to be able to hold them and hug them and talk to them and understand them in a way that maybe no one else has ever been able to understand them. And then getting stories later down there, the best is like people would be like, hey, so it's been like a month, 2 months since I started therapy. It's been a year since I stopped drinking, since I stopped doing drugs, since I started doing this, I started working out, I started meditating, I started blah, 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 this, that, or the other thing. I started getting more involved with my church or getting more in touch with, you know, whatever atheist group that makes them happy, you know, like it doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter at all. It's just awesome that people come to my shows, they listen to my album and they break down, they come to me, they tell me about it, and then they go and create positive pathways to recovery and healing. And that is 100 times more important, as I said, than screaming political slogans at people. I mean, we live in very dark times right now. There's a lot of horrific things going on in our country, and not just our country, but the world. Hell, just in Germany, they had hundreds of Nazis marching against immigrants in Eastern Germany. This is a widespread thing. People are hurt.
Yeah.
People are hurting. People are angry. People are confused. And there's a small amount of people using that hurt and confusion to lead them into hate, to lead them into anger, and to use them as pawns to further political agendas. And I want to combat that with love and care and empathy, and telling people that they're not alone and they don't have a reason to be angry. Or maybe they do. Maybe they have a reason to be angry, but there's a different way to channel it. there's a different way to get in touch with that anger, with that fear inside, because fear and anger are natural, but at the same time, you have to be able to get in touch with it in order not to hurt others. So that is, you know, I think the beginning of healing for us as individuals, people, and even the world.
Dear old friend, this is the end. This road begins and ends with death. And I can't wait here anymore. As I'm called to justify defeat, my heart is breaking here on my knees. And every word falls silently.
I'm inspired. Well, you're going on tour with Jack O'Shea from Bayside coming up here this fall. You said you're working on a live DVD CD release or something?
I got a live DVD CD that I did in Wiesbaden and Iserlohn. One of the shows was in this beautiful church in Wiesbaden. Which was a funny situation because, I don't know, you know, how much you know of my history, but, you know, with that anger that I was speaking about, against religion and things, I mean, I still am, an atheist. I mean, as far as I can be, because I don't know, you know, I have no clue, you know, but as far as I'm concerned, you know, I don't see the proofs of blah, 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 you know, but that's neither here nor there, but just to state that in order to move forward with what I'm saying, I was also for a while very involved with the Church of Satan, which is, despite what people might think, an atheist organization. It's just taking on the symbolism of Satan. It's not like a devil worshiping cult or anything. But these were all things where I was acting out that anger, you know what I mean? And sort of acting out that rejection from it. And so to then be placed, and this is an active church, a Christian church, and they had their concerns because they knew, you know, I wasn't quiet about my involvement, you know. I remember them getting in touch and like, you're Church of Satan and atheism, blah, 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 and all this stuff. And we've seen some things you said, you know. And so I had to sort of write a letter and talk to the priest there and stuff, and like, look, I am not here to offend anyone. I am going to tell my story, but I'm going to be respectful. I'm going to, you know, all this stuff, just as a fellow human being, and I will treat your place of worship respectfully, you know? And it was beautiful. It was an awesome show. And you'll be able to see that. It's a beautiful building. It was 600 people sold out, like beautiful situation, people there to really take it in. And it was awesome. And then the next show that's also in there is, Iserlohn, which it was this cave. And no, I shit you not, literally in a cave.
That's cool.
You walk down this pathway down inside this cave. There's stalactites, stalagmites everywhere. And it's this little sitting area, and they built a stage. And it was like 50 degrees in there, cold, and in the middle of summer. It was like 110 outside, and it was awesome in there. I was wearing a hoodie. But those two shows will be on the DVD and on the CD, and that'll be released early next year on End Hits. And then I will probably do a little touring on that. And then that next year, right now I'm writing for the new album, which will come out the next year after that. And that will be, I feel, just an evolution from what Feral Hymns was. Feral Hymns, it's me, a guitar, cello, maybe some piano. You know what I mean? No drums, just very stripped down. And I think with the next album, I'm going to build on that a little bit, add some drums and like a band type of feel to it. While still having the dynamics, you know, there'll be some songs without drums, just stripped down guitar and stuff, but also getting that dynamic. Cause I feel like when you're just, it's just you and a guitar, there's only so far you can go with that. You know, if you're really looking to speak to people and get out there and like build an audience, you sort of need to have a band, you know, behind you. So I'm going to try that, you know, that's something I've been working on, and it's been a lot of fun sort of building that, and also just learning how to record myself, demo myself, program drums, just shit like that, you know, because when I go out, I just want to get friends to come out on the road and play my songs, you know, with me. I don't want to form an actual band. It's always just going to be Nathan Gray. But I think, you know, just being able to create songs by myself is sort of awesome, you know, and a lot of fun. And I don't have to answer to anybody. I don't have to be like, so maybe you should change that bridge. Screw you. It's my song. No.
Touch, man. Well, Nathan, thank you so much for your time. It was great getting to talk to you. I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, man. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our theme song was written and composed by the legendary Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes and give the show a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, click on the Patreon link at asthestorygrows.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening.